Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us for this Thursday. It's the 8th of November. It's 13 minutes past 9 o'clock. We have a wonderful panel assembled, as we always do, and we're ready to talk about what's going on in the world. Wow. So yesterday we had a lovely event over at the Linda, and we were talking, of course, about the midterms. And I think at some point one of us said, well, you know, obviously we'll be talking about the midterms in days to come. And then about a half hour later, the president took to the microphones in the White House and had a press conference. And that just put the news cycle into a tizzy, because there was all kinds of little tidbits, little out for the press, and then when that got done, he fired the attorney general, and then he found another guy to become the acting attorney general, who apparently has spoken out in the past about his concerns about the Mueller probe, and then we had a tragic shooting in Los Angeles overnight. So, oh, my God. So we have a lot to talk about. We'll get to it all. And, we'll try to get to it all. Anyway, let me introduce the panel to you, and we'll get started. Daily Freeman publisher emeritus Ira Fussfeld is here. Good morning, Ira.
Good morning. I was telling Joe off air that I...
Is your mic on? Is this mic on?
It's on.
Yeah, it is on. But okay, now I can hear you.
Okay. Well, I was telling Joe off air that I'm in the middle of watching all of the Monty Python series on Netflix, and with all of these stories changing, particularly the ones that Trump changes to change the narrative, the only phrase that comes to mind is, and now for something completely different.
Right. Yeah. So. Now for something completely different. And it always, it is. And every time your phone buzzes, you're like, oh, God, now what? Vera Carius Kelly is here. She is a professor of comparative politics at Siena College in Loudonville, New York. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing all right. I've been on the phone with Germany trying to explain how our electoral system works here, and they're all like, what? What's happening over there? We don't really get it. It's very confusing.
We don't understand yours. You don't understand ours. I think that's how that works.
So does the news media call you as the knowledgeable professor, which you certainly are, about this stuff, and ask you to explain American politics to them?
Oh no, they have their faculty in Germany that they call for consultations in Germany.
So this
is
my friends and family.
They're calling me and saying, "Explain."
Well, they should call you.
Yeah, there you go. And also, Judy Patrick is with us, the Vice President of Editorial Development for the New York Press Association. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. Keeping up with the news has become a full-time job for me.
Yeah,
are you tired?
I'm pacing myself. It's a marathon, not a sprint here.
It is.
It is.
You'll be the only one making it to the end, I think. Yes. Because we're all like in a state.
Because Judy actually knows how to run a marathon, unlike the rest of us. And Alan Chartok, good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I have a couple of announcements, if I may.
All right, let's do it.
Self-serving announcements.
All right, self-serve away.
The first one is that tonight, this evening at 7:30, yes, at Williams College, of all places, we're going to have a little panel on post-election, and it's going to be Chris Gibson, Jane Swift, who used to be lieutenant governor, in Massachusetts, and a Republican, of course, Mason Williams, assistant professor of leadership studies and political science, and me, and we're going to be assessing the midterm elections, and it's going to be fun.
That's a hell of a panel.
Yes.
That's a good panel.
In Griffin Hall, wherever that is, we'll find it, at Williams. So I thought I'd mention that. And then I had a call from my wonderful wife, who wanted to tell me that there is an uprising over the potential firing of Mueller, which is one step away from where we are right now. And people are going to be rallying in Times Square and other places at 5 o'clock tonight all over America. So that's quite something.
Hmm. Yeah, we got one. I'll have to look. There's one local that we got a press release for that I'll have to bring up that was somewhere in our region. I have to find that. But there are many. You're right. They're all over where people are meeting. And, yes, it's at 5 o'clock. today. I mean, this is one of the things we talk a lot about social media, but this is one of the things where social media is being used to bring these rallies together very, very quickly within just 24 hours. The other thing I want to mention, we were talking about the spate of stories, and I ended with the tragic shooting in outside of Los Angeles in Thousand Oaks. But we also just learned that Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is hospitalized after fracturing three ribs in a fall. She was at the court. She was at the Supreme Court building and fell. So there is that story as well. All right. Let us begin with, as I said, there's just a lot to talk about. I'm going to start with Jeff Sessions for many reasons. We'll try to bring you up to date on the shooting. I don't know what a whole lot more that we can say on that other than it's a tragedy, and we'll touch on it a bit later on. But the big story, of course, is that President Trump fired Attorney General Jeff Sessions on Wednesday, replacing him with a loyalist who has echoed the president's complaints about the special counsel investigation into Russia's election interference and will now take charge of the inquiry. Can I complain about NPR for a second?
Oh, please, Joe. Please, Joe, get online.
I figured it was safe if I asked the boss if I could do that. NPR was making me mad yesterday because every news organization in the world was reporting that Jeff Sessions was fired.
Fired.
And for whatever reason, NPR kept on saying that he resigned. And the resignation letter says, as you requested. I mean, it was I do not know. I don't understand that language. They used it all day long.
I think Fox News did as well.
Well, that's early. Interesting that Fox and NPR are the two that were using.
It was so clear. I mean, that's the word, right? He was fired. We all knew it was coming.
Fired.
I mean, the first words of the letter is, as you requested, here's my resignation.
Initially, it was reported as on CNN. It was initially reported as a firing. And I've got two. Or there we go.
Oh, that's what it is.
Sorry.
Okay.
I lost my train. Oh, no. Okay. CNN initially reported it as a resignation. And then when they got the letter and saw that at your request, Jake Tapper said to the control room, let's change the chyron. It ought to be resigned. It ought to be fired.
Well, and it became quite obvious, and yet it was being reported all afternoon. Anyway, back to the article
reading. No, but it's a very good point that you're making, and I'm glad that you're doing it about NPR because, you know, we always say it's great that they're not owned by somebody, that they're owned, you know, by the people and the rest. But they do get some money indirectly, I want to point out, from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Maybe they want to, I don't want to go into people's motivations, but maybe they want to protect that money. I don't know.
So Mr. Sessions delivered his resignation letter to the White House at the request of the president, who tapped Matthew Whitaker, Mr. Sessions' chief of staff, as acting attorney general, raising questions about the future of the inquiry led by the special counsel, Robert Mueller. Mr. Whitaker, a former college football tight end and U.S. attorney in Iowa and a one-time Senate candidate in that state, has previously questioned the scope of the investigation. In a column for CNN last year, he wrote that Mr. Mueller would be going too far if he examined the Trump family's finances. This would raise serious concerns that the special counsel's investigation was a mere witch hunt, Mr. Whitaker wrote. Echoing the president's derisive description of the investigation, Mr. Mueller has subpoenaed the Trump Organization for documents related to Russia. Until now, Rod Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general, oversaw the investigation because Mr. Sessions recused himself in March of 2017, citing his active role in Mr. Trump's 2016 presidential campaign. The president was unable to get over that particular action, which ultimately led to his firing yesterday.
Now, for several days, I've been talking about that prescient moment when Rosenstein recently went to the White House to find out if he was being fired. Remember that?
Yes.
And we didn't know what was going on between the two men at that time. Maybe, just maybe, we know why they walked out together. Both seemed to be very happy. And while I have said that, Trump did have his arm around Rosenstein,
perhaps the fix was in.
It certainly seemed that way.
leading to the question, Ira, what did Rosenstein know and when did he know it?
Well, is it, and let me just pile on the question asking, but isn't it completely possible that, because it was a fairly crafty move here, because you don't put Rosenstein, I think most assumed that the second in command would become the first in command. So you go over him completely, and now you've taken Rosenstein out of the equation, and you don't muddy the waters with firing him. You go right to this guy.
Well, I don't have any special insight other than to observe that I don't think, and I know Alan's been predicting it for a long time, I don't think this signals that Mueller is going to get fired. What we know from Whitaker, his appearances on CNN, is they asked him hypothetically what could be done short of firing Mueller, and he said he could you'd do things like cut his budget and just make things more difficult for him to have a legitimate investigation continue. So I think the only observation I make is as typical with Trump. Where did this guy Whitaker come from? Well, Joe just read briefly his resume, but is it too much to suspect that Trump saw him on CNN, liked that opinion he had about Mueller, and said, let's bring him into the Justice Department?
Well, he's been there for quite a while, one way or the other.
About a year.
Yeah, it's got to be less than 2 years.
He was a U.S. attorney in Iowa. He was. He has been the he's been the chief of staff for this year, and he's clearly a plant. You know, Ira.
Well, that's it. That's I mean,
he's
that's
a plant.
He's a plant. Yeah.
I take great exception to. I have said that when you put a rat in a corner. You take away its cheese, it's going to bite you. And I have been saying all along that Mueller is going to get fired because it's the only thing that this president can do. And one of the interesting things, and Judy, then we go to you. And then one of the interesting things about this is it didn't happen the day of the election or the day before the election. It happened the day after the election. You can only imagine what the political result would have been. Judy, I'm sorry.
I would have only added that it was done like an hour after the election.
Well, yeah, it was also done like an hour after the press conference, and clearly he knew what he was going to be doing.
He was asked at the press conference.
It had already been done. That letter was sent before the press conference.
So the cowardly Donald Trump did not announce it at the press conference where he would immediately have to face questions.
Now, I know Judy has something.
All right, well, let's talk about who's the smartest and craftiest person in this whole scenario, and it's Robert Mueller. He's known this is going to happen.
Right.
My bet is he's got sealed indictments just waiting to release, that he's probably already done this. I mean, he has known this is going to happen. He must have a strategy to deal with this.
There was no secret to anybody that Sessions would be out of the equation at some point.
I was going to say, I agree with what Judy said. Mueller has placed various bits of information with attorney generals around the country when there are issues to be investigated, especially the state of New York. Even if anything happens to Mueller, some of the essential information is already disseminated. So with or without a firing, and I doubt he's going to be fired, some of the investigations will go forward. Well, I do agree with the issue of potentially starving his budget, but I think he's also prepared for that.
Yeah.
I mean, Mueller has experience. He's been in doing this for 18 months. I don't think he's at the point where he needs to continue to investigate for months to come. I think he's finishing up.
Okay, I agree with you. One small caveat on what you just said, and I certainly agree with what you said, Vera, and that is that around the country, these U.S. attorneys are Republican appointees, and they all report to the Attorney General of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So one can only suspect that they're not going to be going off in a thousand. Maybe one or two of them will. Preet Bharara yesterday, one of my great heroes, as far as I'm concerned, said he tweeted out, "We're in trouble." And boy, did he know what he was talking about.
He was on CNN several times last night, and he was making, making the comparison to his firing to that of Jeff Sessions. And it was the same scenario. Trump didn't do it.
somebody else did it. They got a lot of other signals, and then you go in for the kill. But then went further, as you said, talking about that this is that what he was getting to is that why we're in trouble is because all of those checks and balances are slowly being chipped away by the president so that ultimately he has full control of the investigation into himself.
And that's so interesting because, as we all know, the Democrats have just won a huge victory taking over the House of Representatives, and they are signaling that they're going to go forward with their investigation. And the president is coming back and saying, okay, if you do that to me, I'll do it to you. I have the Senate to do it with.
And what do you all think about the Ethics Committee potentially putting parameters around Whitaker? I mean, it is possible because he's apparently close to some of the campaign managers within the Trump circle, and he may have to recuse himself. It is possible,
well,
right?
But then that's just a reset, right? That's
yes.
just exactly yeah. what. But it, does anyone at this table believe that he's going to recuse himself?
Well,
no.
We don't know.
I don't.
I think until we see, we don't know.
And my question is, has the president...
I mean, he probably should, but will he?
Has the president had a direct conversation with Whitaker in which he asked him, will you fire Mueller if I appoint you as acting attorney general? Did that discussion actually happen? That would be really interesting.
We only have about a minute. But one of the other things that Preet-Bharara was saying yesterday that I thought was so important is that he said, don't forget, we're looking at this, we're thinking of this as what happened, an investigation into what happened. But we also have to look into what's happening. If you look at what is happening now, is this a continuation of an obstruction of justice? Is what is being done right now, combined with the former actions, if you put all of that together, do you just see a continuation of the obstruction?
And I want to know what happens when this gets to the newly reconstituted Supreme Court of the United States, and whether or not these Supreme Court justices will have the guts that the clear number of Republicans on the United States Supreme Court did when the Nixon tapes came up, and the question was, and they ruled unanimously against the president.
So whatever you pray to, a god or a rock, have Ruth Bader Ginsburg in your prayers right now.
You bet.
We'll take a break.
Ray came in and told us that she's got three ribs fractured and she's being treated.
All right. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel this morning. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Vera Karius-Kelly, and Ira Fussfeld. We welcome you to join us, and you do so in the form of letters. Alan has a bunch of them. Go ahead, Alan.
Okay, so Peter says, demonstrations today, esteemed panel. Today, nobody is above the law. Demonstrations are at 5 p.m. Saratoga Visitor Center, Broadway, 5 p.m. City Park, Glens Falls. And Mary writes, three Western Massachusetts rallies today at 5, pardon me, in response to the Sessions firing and the Whitaker appointment, there are rallies at 5 p.m. in at least three Western Massachusetts venues, the Greenfield Common, the Amherst Common, or the Belchertown Common. Okay. And then we heard from Brucey, who said, Leader Senator Schumer says Matthew Whitaker should recuse. Democratic House Representative Jackie Speier, California 14, says Whitaker must recuse and is better, stronger language. And Democratic leadership needs to talk a lot tougher, says Brucey. And P.S., the resignation issue is important because it allows the appointment of Whitaker. If fired, DAG, Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein would ascend. And isn't one of your rules, Joe, no abbreviations?
Well, no abbreviations, no links.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah. Okay. And then Jim says, post-election. Today is the post-election edition of the roundtable for those of us who live far away to have come to the Linda. Glad to have the TV vitriol over. What I remember from it is this is the year that ads favoring Republicans were calling Democrats socialists. That applies to certain candidates and their connection to Nancy Pelosi and her socialist agenda. By 2018, I expect the ads will be referring to the socialists and fascists. Can't wait. And that's from Jim. And he's writing to us from Bayaca City, Florida.
Wow. Huh.
And Paul says, as you requested, good morning, panel. Someone close to me once lost a job. It was essentially a firing, but she was told by the human resources specialist to use the phrase, as you requested, in her resignation letter. It made her eligible for unemployment benefits. Maybe that's Jeff Sessions' gambit. Ha-ha. Have a great day. That ha-ha was... the writers.
Well, it's interesting what's going to happen to Jeff Sessions next, what his next gig will be. He'll probably show up on a cable news channel.
Oh, he's reportedly thinking about running for his old seat in the Senate.
I thought he was going to write a book.
Whatever. You can probably do both. I don't think we have to worry about him.
Okay. By the way, Peter, who talked about the one demonstration, says bring pots and pans, and Mary, who talked about the Massachusetts demonstrations, said bring flashlights. So you're covered on both ways. You either know there is somebody next to you in the dark by the pots and pans or by the flashlights.
I'll tell you, with the advent of the cell phone, yes, they're annoying, but fact that they have the flashlight on them, they have come in handy many, many, many times. Yeah.
Including at in homes when you're poking around in the dark.
And also
when you're walking your dog.
Dimly lit restaurants, too. You can finally read the menu.
Yep.
Okay. Go ahead, Alan.
And so... Asa says, hi, panel. Seems like Mueller was waiting till after the elections to release his report, you think? Sessions apparently asked if he could stay on until Friday and was told no. Possible that Trump did this so that Trump's guy could just shelve the report and keep it from getting out. You know, that's a possibility.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Possibility. We have to assume that Mueller does know, as you said, Vera, what he's doing, and that he has prepared himself for this. And the real question I was thinking about this morning is Mueller is such a by-the-rule-book guy. One wonders if this thing gets handed to the acting attorney general who says, oh, I got a good place for this, and nobody's ever going to hear about it, whether Mueller is capable, because he always follows the rules, of leaking it.
I don't think leaking is what he's going to do, because I think that is, you know, not what I think appropriate from within what he thinks mm-hmm. is proper conduct. But I think he has thought through legally what can be done to disseminate some of the investigations around the country. So that's his version of what we might call leaking, but he just simply deposits information in secure locations where it can't be retracted.
So is there ever a time for courage? I ask that because we look at the Pentagon Papers, for example. And, you know, that was really an extraordinary act mm-hmm. of courage. Somebody could have gone to jail, including the publisher of the Washington Post.
Right. So, I mean, Mueller has a team, right?
Right.
There are members of his
team. On the team.
Yes. It's not just, I mean, we always think about Mueller as making all the decisions, but it's a team. It is an entire group of people involved in this process.
Well, is there somebody on that team who is willing to risk going to prison for it? That's the question. Are we facing such a crisis in America, the concept of either pre-fascism or fascism, that you do this kind of thing?
You know, it's interesting that they have tried to sully the good name of Bob Mueller a couple of times. A couple of weeks ago, there was mm-hmm. an effort to mm-hmm. have some false accusations thrown at him. I think he has credibility with the public in a way that almost nobody else in Washington does at this point. Even the Trump supporters may tend to believe him. So that kind of political capital is priceless, and let's see what he does.
Well, he's been bombarded by Fox News and by Jeanine Pirro and by Hannity, so I'm not sure.
Doesn't work.
Well, we don't know. But I was going to ask the question, if something happens between now and January that shuts down Mueller or the information that he's already uncovered, and isn't the Democratic Judicial Committee in January going to be able to unseal or undo whatever has just been done? Don't you think that it's impossible for me to believe that all of this work that Mueller and his team have accomplished is going to be simply buried and never to be seen or heard about again?
Maybe they could subpoena Mueller.
Well, that's right.
Well,
I mean, I don't know how it would happen, but right. I think it's got to happen.
I think you're right on that. It's not going to just evaporate and disappear.
You can only imagine mm-hmm. what would have happened if this firing happened a day before the election. I mean, think about what was in play. The United States Senate was mm-hmm. in the play. And here you get
Mitt Romney, who sure doesn't like this president, and who's just been elected to the United States Senate, and has already signaled that this is unacceptable behavior, then the Democrats lost at least three senators in this round. They wouldn't have done that, I suspect, but I suspect they would not have lost those. They might have gained the Senate, and they knew it.
Yeah, but I mean, we knew Trump wasn't going to fire Sessions before the election. No. He had announced that he would do it right after. I mean, I suspected he would wait another day, perhaps. So it did surprise me that it was,
of course,
you know, right away. But
well, but if
you knew it was coming,
if Romney intends to be a mensch about this and step up, could he not be thwarted by McConnell, who would marginalize him in the Senate in any number of behind-the-scenes ways that would try to discourage Romney?
What do you got in mind?
Well, I don't know. Everything from giving him a lousy office to giving him less authority on committees or things
this
of that
what,
nature.
This is one of the richest men in the world.
Yeah, I understand.
I don't think he worries about that.
Does anybody believe that Romney might actually want to run for
president?
I was
thinking about
this so I'm thinking, you know, he's now getting himself ready for being the kind and gentle Republican alternative to Trump.
Yes, and the question there is, does he dare? I mean, we know that there has been no movement, virtually no movement, about the Republican regulars and Trump. So it would have to be almost impeachable behavior that would allow for a vacancy, basically, here. Let's go to Jeannie, who says, question about Mueller. Can Adam Schiff hire Mueller in January? Yeah, so this has been raised by a lot of people. Will the Democrats hire Mueller, and then Mueller goes forward with his investigation? You know, I think if I'm inside Mueller's mind, I don't think he'd want that.
Mm-hmm. You know? He would lose credibility.
Well, he would, unless, of course, there was some kind of contractual, you know, agreement about how this would go. Okay, so that's from Jeannie. Okay, and then Diane says, Mueller, from Diane in Schuylerville, I'm worried about the safety of the information collected by the special counsel's office. Should I be?
I remember Nixon and the tape and the Rosemary Woods transcribing the tapes. 18-minute gap.
We still don't know what was there. Arlo has always claimed that that he was playing Alice's Restaurant, which was exactly 18 minutes. anyway, and then Bob says from Albany, if Whitaker moves to cut the special counsel's budget, I bet there will be an immediate online crowdsourcing effort that will more than overcome any official shortfall. I know that I'll chip in. You know, I've been thinking about this. The last time something like this happened, Roselle and I went down to the town hall thinking there would be a lot of people. I brought my banjo, played We Shall Not Be Moved just the other day, and nobody else showed up. So, you know, I mean, there's a time when we're talking about the democracy and the continuation.
I mean, it does seem that several weeks ago, months ago, when there was talk there was a report that there was a serious conversations. I think the Times reported there were serious conversations in the White House with the president looking to fire Mueller. And Republican senators all said, well, that, you know, that would bring on a constitutional crisis and we would, you know, we wouldn't allow that to happen and so forth. You're not hearing that. In the last 12 hours, you haven't heard that. At least I haven't heard that.
By the way, I have a real problem with this constitutional crisis business. When they had to go to the Supreme Court, Joe, and ask the Supreme Court to define whether or not Nixon had to agree to give up the tapes. That was a constitutional crisis.
He was defying a subpoena, wasn't he?
Yeah, that was a constitutional crisis. I don't know, other than the fact that we all believe, or many of us believe, that this guy, this president, is defying the Constitution. I mean, but I don't see where the exact same kind of crisis exists.
On that
note, you use the words constitutional crisis.
I mean, you know, we're in there's a lot of hyperbolic speech these days, you know, and I think you might be right. We don't really see that as clearly as maybe some other observers.
Am I the only naive person in the room who believes that as the yes, all right, then forget it. I just keep holding out hope that there are enough patriotic law-abiding Republicans in the United States Senate who at some point along the line, if this thing continues to spin in the way it's going, are going to say the country is more important than Donald Trump.
Let's take Lindsey Graham very quickly. Yeah. Let's take Lindsey Graham. Well, we have a piece of tape. We keep saying over and over again, this will be the beginning of the end of Trump if he does this. Now Lindsey Graham is shut. He's keeping shut. And a lot of people think he's auditioning.
I mean, it's
the
really appalling to see how self-interested they are instead of representing specific values that their party
You are
held,
so right.
So is this the legacy that they want?
No, that's right.
I think the Republican Party, as we see it right now, is done. What kind of a party is it? What kind of ideas does it represent? I mean, let's see if Romney has some, you know, backbone here.
Well, when you say, is it done? You know, they just took the Senate again.
No, I mean done in terms of their commitment to values. Now they have become a transactional party. They're the party of Trump. And that's what I mean in terms of not representing any sort of essential ideas that I can understand.
You know, you're absolutely right. And here's the thing. When the great history is written of this period, the people, the women and the men who stood up against their own self-interest and did what was right for the country, those are the ones the history books are going to say, here stood a person, as opposed to a bunch of sheep who went along.
Right. And I don't think President Trump is a true conservative. I don't think conservatives believe it either, but he's gotten things done for him. But now that the Democrats control the House, he might start working with them and he might abandon some of those conservative positions that they love him so much for, and they may feel they may be isolated.
I just don't agree with you. I think Freud was right. Character starts at four, doesn't change, and he's not changing.
No, he's not changing. I mean, he showed that yesterday in the press conference. He's not going to change. His approach is frontal assault.
Judy gets the right of reply.
No, I think that he will do what he needs to do to make him look good so he can win re-election in 2020. And if that means doing some liberal things, he'll do that. He'll do whatever it takes to win re-election.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Vera Carius-Kelly, and Ira Fussfeld. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Let's go to a couple of other stories that are making news, and I just have to find there we go. Okay, so we've been talking about the obviously talking about Jeff Sessions being fired. We've been talking about the Mueller probe. This all happened just moments after a press conference that the president gave, where he vowed a warlike posture if Democrats investigate him. And this was about an hour and a half. We aired it here on WAMC. It's fascinating and frightening to listen to. But it was a post-election news conference with an offer to work across party lines. He had a conciliatory tone for about the first 10 minutes. That quickly turned contentious. And then, of course, barely an hour later, he announced the firing of Jeff Sessions. House Democrats also made the traditional nod to bipartisanship after their victory. But it was it was quite obvious that any thoughts of lowering the temperature after the campaign seemed to dissipate as the president scolded reporters, not only from CNN, but from NBC as well.
Democrats. And PBS.
I'm sorry?
And PBS.
And PBS, who did they go after?
Yeah, Michelle
Sindel. Oh, that's right.
Which was, we were talking about racism, how she asked a perfectly legitimate question about nationalism, and he claimed she was being racist with the question.
He claimed a great victory because Republicans held on to the Senate and even knocked off Democratic incumbents in Indiana, North Dakota, and Missouri while losing only one of their own seats in Nevada. Although the balance of power in Congress was no longer in doubt, some key contests remained in flux. Of course, the Stacey Abrams seat is still undecided. Brian Kemp, the Republican, has announced victory, where Stacey Abrams has yet to concede, saying that that there are enough absentee and votes that remain that would at least, at very least, lead to a recount. Correct? Mm-hmm. At his news conference, Mr. Trump seemed to be trying to adjust to the new reality in Washington. I'd like to see bipartisanship. I'd like to see unity. But he said he would not tolerate investigations and would use allies in the Senate to open inquiries against Democrats in response. If that happens, then we're going to do the same thing and government comes to a halt and I would blame them.
You know, it may be a little bit off topic here, Joe, and I apologize, but there is something in this country called that we operate under called the Goldwater Rule, which the psychologists and psychiatrists use, which is you're not supposed to say somebody is mentally ill, like Trump, unless you have actually had him on the couch. In other words, unless you've actually done that. And there are a whole group of psychologists and psychiatrists in this country who are calling for overruling the Goldberg rule. And in fact, some of them have already grouped together and said this guy is dangerous because he's mentally ill. Now, it's interesting because you have the 25th Amendment, and you have a whole long list of things. If you get a mentally ill guy or president or her, what do you do about that? How do you have to have the principal officers of the government, meaning the cabinet, have to all sign on to this and say, you know, yeah, this is something. Now, this guy, when he shifts the way you've just read it, Joe, from one thing to the other and back and forth again, as if nothing has any staying power, nothing means anything. And I often invoke Freud and say, you know, he said character doesn't change after the age of four. And I happen to believe that. Certainly it's true about me. And I wonder whether what has to happen here for the cabinet and others to say this guy is so dangerous and so out of control that he has to be removed.
Is Goldwater refer to Barry Goldwater?
Yes. Because what happened were people were psychoanalyzing him from afar, and they have adopted, I don't know whether it's formally or informally. I think it's formally this thing called the Goldwater Rule, which means we can't do that unless he has been a patient of ours. And of course, if he's been a patient of yours, you can't do it because of the HIPAA requirements.
I sort of remember in 1964 when he was feared. People were legitimately afraid of him, much like mm-hmm. we hear about Trump now.
They thought he was going to set off an atomic bomb.
Yeah. And now today, the Barry Goldwater of 1964 it would be considered a pussycat.
And that's true.
You know, from a news perspective, that news conference was unfruitful. Didn't give us any real insight. In fact, he did not tell us that he was firing Jeff Sessions. So it was I step back and I look at how productive are these press briefings, if at all. It allows us to see inside his head and how it's working. It was a relief to me because right after the Trump press conference, we had the Nancy Pelosi and the Chuck Schumer press conferences, which were so much more normal. And even though they were a bit boring, I mean, they were interesting from an intellectual perspective.
And the only thing you got out of Trump's press conference yesterday was an insight again into the kind of man that he is. There was nothing really
substantive. I mean, it's just confirmed.
Sure, that's what it is. It is important. But I think it's important that the public see that. I was disappointed on several levels, one of which was in the press. I was disappointed when he chastised Peter Alexander, saying, "I don't think much of you either," and there was laughter in the room. I don't think I don't know if that came from the press. I hope it didn't, but that was not.
I think it did come
good.
From the press.
Yeah, and there was something else that just skipped my mind. But
there were a couple of reporters with accents that he said, "I can't understand what you're saying."
Yes.
A very rude.
Say hello to Shinzu for me or something like that.
Yeah, that's
right. I mean, it's just so to me, all these press conferences are not about sharing information or gaining insights. It's about performance art.
Well,
it's
what do you
show.
Want to do?
You know, it's a show that is performed for the general public.
Sure.
People laugh at rude comments, and everybody knows it's just for, TV ratings.
Okay,
like
so what should be done?
What should be done?
Based on what you're saying, what do you want to? What's the?
Well,
what do you want to do?
I will tell you that Rosemary Arameo called for a long time ago of doing away with the daily press briefing and doing away with these press conferences.
Well, we talked about that on the Media Project this week. I don't think it would be a good look if the press walked out en masse. First of all, it wouldn't be en masse because of the bifurcation of the press now. But I just think the press, they need to show up and ask questions. I don't think Jim Acosta's questions were unfair. I think
Rex did on the Media Project. Well, you're going to hear him say that he thought that Acosta may have been rude.
He may have been rude,
but that the questions were fair.
Let's take a break because I want to talk about this. I had a hard time with that. Okay. I don't know what to make of all that. We had a lot of letters. We'll do that as well. We'll be right back. Hey, you ready for news, Ray? Great, we're ready for you. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan has a lot of letters. We'll get to those in just a second. Let's just take on this Jim Acosta issue for a second, real quick. So Jim Acosta is a reporter for CNN. He is their White House correspondent. He has been, I think, quite outspoken in what his feelings about the administration. Yesterday, there was a standoff between he and the president of the United States. He was asking several questions. He started with a statement where he said his first words were, "I want to challenge you on a statement that you made." There's obviously no love lost between the two gentlemen. It devolved very, very quickly. And
let's make it clear. He was saying, "I, Acosta, want to challenge you, Mr. President."
Correct. And he wanted to challenge him on the assertion that our country was being invaded by the migrants, the migrant immigrants. So now this is what help me with this, journalists in the room. So you know what the answer is going to be, right? You know how Trump's going to answer. You also know that there's animosity between the two, and Acosta refuses to back down. The president just huffs and chuffs and then starts to insult him. The later charge was his press credentials have been pulled. We thought just for the day, but now it seems that till the end of the month. Is that right? Was what I was hearing at least until the end of the month. The other question being that, okay, so that happens now. Was it warranted? The reason that the White House is giving, Sarah Huckabee Sanders said that we will not tolerate a reporter putting their hands on someone who is working for the White House, an intern who was in charge of the microphone. Looking at the tape, it doesn't appear as to that actually happening. However, that's the assertion.
Well, Alan and I disagree on a basic premise that I made on the media show, and that is I believe that Acosta was ambushed. I believe Trump was looking for a fight. He didn't have to call on Acosta. He must have known that he was going to get a difficult question and a question that he would not have liked. So let's start with that Trump was looking for a fight. I don't believe.
But I think Acosta was looking for a fight,
well,
too.
Well, I'm not sure I agree with that. Acosta is an abrasive or maybe viewed as an abrasive reporter. He asked a difficult question, and he asked it in a strong way. And I interpret the word challenge as not like I want to challenge you to a duel. I'd like to challenge you on a point that you made. I'd like to hear what you
just
have to
think
say.
About how Jack Kennedy handled tough
absolutely.
Questions.
Absolutely. But now, on the other hand, what about Sam Donaldson, who used to yell at? I mean, in the there are different reporters and different styles and different presidents and different styles.
And in addition to that, I also would say Acosta has been rudely treated by the president before. So as a human being, he's probably on alert. He's probably trying to use the expression, "I challenge you," in the way of saying, "I want to question your policy, your idea, your use of language." And I would say he's right to do so because he has been treated rudely. And why should, as a reporter, why should you always take a beating? And the president gets away with this conduct.
Because
but you
that,
have to be kind and gentle.
But because of that personal relationship and that personal animosity, is he then, can he still be objective in his job?
Well, one other thing, if I may, and that is, it goes a little deeper than this. CNN, which I think started out, the white of the egg, has gotten more and more aggressive. towards this president. And this guy represents his news organization. That's what he does. And so I think you got to think about that also. That's one other part.
Also consider the notion that when the president is answering a question, he is talking over the reporters. He does not let them get the complete question out.
No.
He answers whatever, as most politicians do, they answer the question they want to be asked, not the question that was actually asked. Now in our industry, in the journalism industry, there's a real debate here about whether or not people should even cover these press briefings. But most journalists will say you got to continue to ask questions.
You have to. Well, and not only that, they'll get somebody else to go in there and ask the tough questions, and they'll put Acosta on the television as a commentator or whatever.
Right.
Well, just hit the word that I was going to reach. I think where CNN and other cable networks and some other outlets on print and broadcast have evolved into dangerous territory is when they have a reporter like Acosta on a panel show at night asking for his opinion as opposed to what just happened.
Exactly.
I mean, I believe that Karen DeWitt is the best Capitol reporter that you guys have here on NPR.
It's true.
Yet she shows up and offers her opinion on the PBS show every weekend.
So what's wrong with that?
Because she's a reporter.
Right.
Let's not use her. Acosta.
Is that opinion, though?
It's opinion.
I think it's insight.
It's analysis.
So yesterday I asked her when we had her on during the election, right, Joe?
Yeah.
I said, he says he'll serve out, I think I asked about this, he'll serve out his 12 years. Do you believe him? And she said no. And that's
that's fair. Saying I don't think he should go or something like that. Not that she said that. I just think that once the reporters start offering their opinions as opposed to their factual analyses, they're in dangerous territory.
And Judy's nodding her head, saying yes. I agree.
Yeah, I agree with Ira, and it's something we always were careful of, the reporters I worked with. But when they're sitting at a panel elbow to elbow with people who are offering their opinions, it's hard for the public to differentiate.
I would decline the appearance.
And I agree with both. I don't agree with either of you, and I think you're dead wrong.
Well, there you go. I mean, go ahead.
I was just, in general, I was going to say there is something that is changing about how news are covered. When you look at the president's direct attack against Don Lemon, for example, and then, Acosta, so Don Lemon makes comments on TV, then Acosta is his colleague. I mean, this is all
have a hard time defending Don Lemon.
Permeating throughout the organization in terms of a sentiment for how this president is reacting to the entire organization, to individuals, picking out particular people and attacking them because of their gender or race.
Well, that's right.
That is what is really shaping the conversation largely now.
Look at April Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
April Ryan is a wonderful African-American reporter who is in there. She's in the trenches. She challenges the president regularly. And yet she is respected. She's widely respected, even within that press pool. You mentioned this earlier when people started, I think more people were on the president. I think more people in that room were on the president's side than they were in Jim Acosta's side. And isn't that telling in some way?
Yeah, but it's just the way, first of all, it's the way journalism has evolved, and particularly cable journalism. Let's use Don Lemon as an example. Now, he's supposed to be the host and moderator and questioner, but he also offers his opinion. So if I'm a member of the Trump administration, I might have think that I can get a fair shot being interviewed with Don Lemon. I don't want to know. I don't know I don't know Peter Baker of the New York Times. I have no idea who he voted for. I don't know who Maggie Haberman voted for. I know.
Yes,
I pretty
do.
Well.
Oh,
no,
you do. I mean,
stop that.
But I mean,
they're objective reporters.
No, ridiculous. Maggie Haberman and April Ryan, both of them, are constantly on CNN shows commentating.
Well, they are.
So
they are.
I mean, I don't know what the differences are.
And what about FOX?
Who?
FOX. Well, that's a whole other subject.
I just think, this distinction between print journalists and reporters and commentators doesn't exist anymore. I see these people all the time on shows commentating and giving their analysis. I don't think we can say it's an opinion. In a sense, they just have an opinion on something. I think they have experience, they have training, they have knowledge, and they combine that into analysis. And that's just what we see in news today. It's this, you know, that this division between this traditional news analysis and writing on print news and what we see on cable TV no longer exists.
We want to go to letters.
Yeah,
but
I think you're 100% right, and I'll stipulate that. And I think that's one of the reasons that journalism has had a hard time in the last decade or so.
Okay, so here we go on the letters. Thank you, Joe. Betsy says, shocking dismissal of reporter. Hi, panel. Acosta was actually asking hard questions that Trump should have been able to answer. Now the White House has pulled his pass because he's asked too many questions. He was hardly rude. He was doing his job with a president who calls the press the enemy of the people. Trump sounded like a petulant child who was losing it. I'm just reading them, okay?
Right. It sounds to me like a mini dictator who can't wait for his opportunity to rise.
And also, he is such a diversionist. He loves to pull your eyes from one place and put it. Okay, Tracy said, press conference. I attended yesterday's roundtable at the Lindo. When subject of Trump's war against the press came up, I wanted to tell you that my husband works for the same network that Malcolm appears on and on an occasion has to bring a satellite truck home. He told me the employees of that network have been told that they have to take any identifying logos off the vehicle and equipment so it wouldn't easily be identifiable. The truck is sometimes parked in my driveway. Scary times. We must always fight for our free press. Thank you for what you do. And that's from Tracy from Warwick. And Eileen says, press conference, I wonder if you saw the intern try to push Acosta down, then squat down in front, and then Sarah Sanders blames Acosta for putting his hands on the intern.
Yeah.
What a mess. And I think the laughter was largely out of nerves. I agree with that on the part of the press. They're trying to be poised and prepared for Trump's erratic and unpredictable responses. Not easy. What's lacking across the board? Civility.
Just a quick thing, though. On the pulling of the credentials is concerning.
Very much.
That is not, in my opinion, not the way to do it.
But his base likes it. His base likes
okay,
it.
But what about the other journalists? What do they do?
The problem there, Joe, is that the other journalists are jealous of Acosta. Now, we know that there's not all of them are, but some of them are. He's not the best-liked guy in the room.
But there's a correspondence association. Yeah, what should be done to try to get this guy his credentials
back?
They
put out a statement and of rebuke, and we'll see what happens. If you're telling me that Acosta's credentials are pulled for a month, that's not satisfactory. Their statement didn't work, and they've got to think about what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. I think every journalist in that room, at least the ones who are on moderate or left, have to be thinking that they could be next. And so they've got to decide how this is going to go forward.
And
but this is just outrageous.
And Dave says, hi, panel. So a guy is abused and denigrated for more than a year for continuing to ask questions that the interviewee doesn't like. Who would blame the questioner for not being deferential? The question I have is why it is rude to ask questions that are unpopular with the president. Trump should just decline to call on Acosta, but he doesn't because he loves the opportunity to use CNN as a foil. I like it. I think
that's right.
Yeah, that's right.
That's true.
And Aaron says, bipartisanship. Good morning, panel. Pelosi is already saying she will work with the Republicans, and Trump said yesterday he supports Pelosi becoming speaker. There was was a little jab in the gut.
Yeah.
We knew Republicans lacked integrity, but so do Democrats.
Yeah.
The only reason Pelosi is willing to work with Republicans and Trump is because she works for her donors, not the American people. We will look back at this time in history and be embarrassed that the Democrats didn't do much of anything to stop Trump.
Well, wait a minute. Is Pelosi being criticized for saying that she's willing to work with Trump if they can do something that's mutually beneficial to Trump,
apparently,
Pelosi, and the country?
Apparently.
Well,
okay.
You're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Apparently. And moving on, Ruth says, Whitaker, correct me if I'm wrong, it is my understanding that if the Attorney General is fired or quits, there's a line of succession that Trump has approved. First, the Deputy Attorney General. Two, the Solicitor General, Noel Francisco. And third, Assistant General Steve Engel. Is there any way to prevent the sycophant and person involved in a patent marketing scam, Matthew Whitaker, from taking charge of the office? Thanks.
Well, there's going to be a big public outcry, but we'll see. And believe me, the Democrats aren't going to shut up about this guy. Tim says, assumptions. You are all making the assumption that Mueller's report, it says Miller, but Mueller's report will out legal behavior and interference by the Trump campaign staff. It is possible that a Mueller report could find Russian tampering, but without participation by the Trump campaign. They certainly weren't interested in any information the Russians could provide, but it is not clear that they participated. I am not a supporter of his, but don't forget, innocent until proven guilty.
Correct.
But,
I mean, that is correct. Yeah. We don't know what's in the report.
And James says, Civil War II, it looks like the ghosts of the Confederacy, I like this letter, have risen up and are winning this time. It's looking more and more like the current Civil War will get hot. The last one was settled by force. Are we facing a 21st century version of the same? Well, I don't know that we're going to have outright fighting in the street, but I do think that when you take a look at what people who are running for office, who are people of color, are facing here, whether they're in Georgia or whether they're in Florida or other places where their opponents are calling them monkeys, there is the ghost of the Civil War here.
I don't believe it's far-fetched to think it could become shooting war, because they're already seeing a shooting war.
Exactly. We see all this gun-based violence and these and you know, ideologues are enraged on you know, people that are just simply motivated by certain political rhetoric. I mean, it is, in essence,
and
in
the
part
pipe bombs.
And you know, a shooting war of the these bombers.
Time for the leadership to step up.
Catherine says, investigation. TikTok. Catherine says, investigation in jeopardy. There are also protests happening in New Paltz and Kinderhook. Check with Indivisible.
All right. Let me just break in there. If you go to act.moveon.org, act.moveon.org, the Mueller firing rapid response events, there is a page, and you can go to that. Then you will just put in your zip code, and they will tell you where the local event is.
Wow.
And all of them are listed there. So it's act.moveon.org.
And Russ says, justice delayed. Only the accident of Sessions' participation of Trump campaign prevented his obstruction of the Mueller investigation. We should not forget that he was architect of the policy to kidnap the children of refugees, and that he continues to hold thousands of unaccompanied underage migrants in jail for pointless procedural reasons. If there were justice, he would have been made to account for these outrages. And Derek says, Sessions firing. I may have been wrong, but it seems like the Vacancy Reform Act bars the president from appointing an unconfirmed replacement for attorney general unless the current AG has resigned. Well, that's what happened, as opposed to being fired by the president. If this is true, it may explain Sessions' odd resignation. The legality of this could be challenged in court. And Frank says, indict a sitting president? Question mark. Last week or so, some FBI documents regarding Richard Nixon were declassified, which showed that Nixon was going to be indicted for his crimes, which forced him to resign. Do you think the special counsel will use this tactic to encourage the liar-in-chief to follow suit? And that's Frank from Middletown. And then George says, is it possible? Is it possible that the House under the Democrats could find fund Mueller's investigation outside of the DOJ, or could Mueller pass his report on directly to the House? That's a very complicated question, and it involves whether they have to get the president's approval on a law, or whether they can find the money some other way, or whether people can chip in. I don't know. Jamie says, Mueller in the law. Mueller is not a separate part of the government. If the administration decides to classify the report, what can he do? Remember, Mueller only announces indictments. He does not discuss underlying evidence. And then from Scott, Roundtable, the White House and Acosta et al. Dear esteemed friends, with the regarding to the White House's treatment of Jim Acosta, April Ryan, Yamashi Alcindor, and other journalists, what duty do members of the White House press corps owe to each other? For example, should they agree to ask Acosta's question for him until answered? Is there a professional code of ethics among the White House press, or is it more of a Lord of the Flies mentality? Perhaps a discussion for the Media Project. Yes, and we do talk about it on the Media Project this week.
Well, and I do think there was, and correct me if I'm wrong, Ira, but prior to Acosta's question, there was another question where normally that reporter would have gotten a follow-up, and he said, okay, and the president didn't want the follow-up.
Yeah,
and he said, I'll yield that because I want to, because I know I'm going to go to Jim, and he'll get that appointment.
Well, sometimes.
He also put down the Yahoo reporter who was questioning him about his support among African Americans. And he, and in fact, he said to him, it's 8%, Mr. President, and he made it look like that was an incorrect or unfair question. I'll tell you what bothered me. I thought of the other thing that bothered me was that several of the reporters had to stand up or decided to stand up and say, oh, yes, we need to have more of these press conferences. Please, Mr. President, come and talk to us. No, don't beg the man for
a
press
conference. Yeah, there's a certain amount of groveling at the press conference that was unseemly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We don't need groveling.
No.
All right, go ahead, Alan.
Okay, very quickly.
No, you're good. Okay. We've got another five, so go ahead.
I'm deeply dismayed by the use of red and blue to blanket whole states with a singular political position. I believe that use of this language by the media, your dear selves included, I'm afraid, enhances the us versus them mentality. Please do not continue to use this language to paint over diversity and inflame division. Huh?
I agree completely. I hate the red and blue. I keep thinking, red is which one and blue is which one, and what are we talking about when we talk about purple? I think it's jargon, and I think it further alienates the regular Americans from what the news media is talking about.
Well, didn't that just relatively recently happen, and that's the way the TV networks painted the
this
maps?
This is a red state and this is a blue state, you mean?
Yeah, so it became part of the vernacular.
I think it happens to be true. I think there are red states. I think there are blue states. I think there are purple states
percentage-wise, but it doesn't take into account upstate, downstate, especially in states like New York. And it,
you don't think New York is a blue state?
Well, it is a blue state, but you could go up above
Hudson,
Saratoga or Glens Falls, and it's red.
Okay, seeing red over red. We did that one. Okay, Darren says press corps. I would love to see the White House press corps strong enough to stand up to Trump by refusing to even enter the briefing room until Acosta's credentials are restored. They should stop being stenographers and start acting like reporters. There's a downside to this one, and that is if they did that, the president would say, "You see, this is the enemy of the people. They're all as one. They hate me." And that's why I have to do what I'm doing. That's what he would say, right?
He's sort of already doing that, isn't he?
But the writer had two different thoughts there. One of his, I agree, they should not be stenographers, which is, we've talked about that before, which is why it's perfectly legitimate for them to be asking tough questions. The question of the reporters walking out, you know, let's just say that like-minded reporters walked out, there'd still be 50 reporters left in the room.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say, why are we even thinking that these are particularly tough questions?
They're not.
They're just questions about the president lying to the American public.
Which is, by the way, the next letter. Hi, all. Wonderful work, as always. Is it your position? No. That reporters should not ask challenging questions.
That's the president's position.
What?
Yeah. That's the president's position.
The reporter should be asking about
every single policy. And it is the president's approach to misuse terminology. He misused the expression racism to attack an African-American reporter. He uses terminology to mislead the public, to such as caravan, to threaten and increase the fear among people. So we should always, all our reporters should ask questions about why he does it, how he does it, what the consequences are. These are common questions asked by all journalists.
Okay, so Kat, again, position that reporters should not ask challenging questions, that seems like dangerous, an untenable standard for the press to be held to if the press is going to do its job as, quote, watchdog of democracy. In fact, I think one of the problems with our current media is that they are too concerned about treating politicians with kid gloves. I'm surprised, actually, the word of the century, that you're not defending Acosta more strongly. Well, I think this is a panel, folks, and everybody has been saying different things. So what do you mean you're? So cut it out. Thanks for your insights, said the president. To all, regarding the role of reporters, what about Edward R. Murrow and Senator McCarthy?
Yeah.
What about him? Yeah, he had a lot of guts, and he got fired for it in the end.
Yeah, but, you know, he was right to
ask
those questions.
He did the right thing, sure. And then for the last one here, Joe, Darren says press corps. I would like to see a White House press corps strong enough to stand up to Trump by refusing to even enter the—we did that one. Okay, there we are.
Yeah, well, I disagree with that, the writer who doesn't believe that the media is asking challenging questions, because I believe by and large they are. But there are exceptions, notably, you know, the Sinclair reporters, the Fox and Friends people. They're more likely to toss softballs. I think the print press, most of the broadcast press is asking realistic, hard questions, and all they want is an answer.
But the problem is that then they're being used as props by the president because it that appeals to his base.
That mm-hmm. by this president who is not what's a good word that's not a dirty word.
I mean,
who's willing to do this?
You said from the very beginning, and I agree with you that it's a setup.
Yeah,
you know, you walk up into an ambush because he can use that. And that, I mean, that video is all over, everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And for the president's base, that looks great. Well, I mean, what better way to show the enemy of the people?
And the president's base is 40%.
Yeah. And he may have been, the president may have been ready to go to fight with somebody. And his people may have told him, do not pick a woman, for example. You know, because they were already concerned about how he's been attacking women and the group. So they probably figured, Let's pick an Acosta type. Let's go for him.
Let's go with Jim.
Let's go with Jim. You know, pummel him. That'll go over well. Do not pick a female reporter.
Good point.
But I think we need to take we need to reassess how we cover this president from a journalism perspective.
True.
Because what we're doing so far, it sometimes works very well, but sometimes there are disasters. And I think yesterday was a disaster. The public did not end up being enlightened by that at all.
Okay, and then we have to go. But how do you enter that room and not know what you're getting yourself into? And this is to bolster your excellent point that we have to rethink the way that we cover this president. Mm-hmm. I mean, every press conference that we've had like this, that where it has just been the president and the press and it's been planned, has devolved into what we saw yesterday.
This is a. I don't want to go back to my sports roots any more than I have to. But you want to go into a press conference in Billy Martin's office at Yankee Stadium and think of the anxiety that reporters had when we went in there and asked him a question.
Because he was going to blow up.
Because
right?
he was going to blow up. You never knew how many drinks he had. You never knew how angry he was on a given day. But this was pre-cable.
And people loved him.
But well, you know what? Can I just say, we can tell when Trump is going to have a bad news conference when he has come recently out of the tanning booth and has those white rings
oh,
around
boy.
His eyes.
There we go.
Things are not good. Have you ever? I mean,
well,
this,
he had
serious.
Just, let's, Vera, he had just lost an election. That's what this was all about.
Let's end there, shall we?